Good afternoon, class. We're going to talk this afternoon for 1 hour on all the classes of neurology that we've done, or anatomy. Go through them, get them organized, get them in your brain, so that tomorrow you can produce them on the test and get the 100. So, way back on our first class, we talked about the general organization of the nervous system. General organization, the entire thing. I'm not talking about just the spinal cord or the peripheral nerves, but the entire nervous system. What are the three functions of the nervous system? Sensory, okay. Integrative, and motor. All right, the whole nervous system works that way to do that. You have two different cell types that work together to produce those three functions. What are the two types of cells? Neurons and neuroglia. Okay, that's it. Neurons and neuroglia, they come together, they produce a lot of different structures, and their total job is just those three functions. Bring in the sensory, integrate it, process it, analyze it, and then send out motor. That's the whole function. Okay, so the neuron we're going to get to in a moment, but first the neuroglia. In that handout, that's the only time neuroglia is mentioned. So what are the neuroglia? There's four of them centrally. Let's go with the four central first. The one that looks like a star supports. Astrocyte, good. The one that also looks like a star, a little bit smaller of a star, but that produces myelin in the central nervous system. All right, they go, good. The one that lines the ventricles. I'm not going in order. What is it?
Epidermal
cells. Good. The epidermal cells. And then the one that I think of is the trash collector. It gets all the debris, takes it out of the nervous system centrally. What's that one called?
Microglia.
And it's like a monocyte. Okay, if you understand what a monocyte is. So those are your central ones. How about peripherally? How many are there?
Two.
Just two. Because there are other structures peripherally that will take the jobs, or you don't need both of the other jobs that you do in the central. So peripherally, which one produces myelin?
Schwann cell.
The Schwann cell. And which one acts like an astrocyte?
Satellite.
The satellite cell. The one I don't have a picture of. Great. So other than that, everything that we talked about that first hour is repeated. So let me just continue on with the neuron. The neuron is really the star of the nervous system. How would you define it? What would you, you know, if you had to just say what the neuron is, what is it? Okay, I'm hearing a lot of things I want to hear. Structural and functional unit, that describes a neuron. Structural and functional unit of the nervous system. In other words, you can just take that neuron and it pretty much explains what the nervous system does. The neuroglia supports, but that neuron really does those three functions, doesn't it? It does the sensory, the motor, and the integration. Okay. The other thing I think I heard someone say was special. It's a special cell. It can get excited, which means it can depolarize. What's the other special cell that can depolarize?
Muscle cell.
Good. Okay. I'm flip-flopping back between notes here. The muscle cell can depolarize. All right, so we have a special cell, structural and functional unit of the nervous system. It consists of three different parts, starting with the D1. What's that?
The
dendrite. The function of the dendrite?
Pull
it in. Bring it in. What is it bringing in? The impulse. That's a good word for it, the impulse. So at the very tip of a dendrite, what do you find?
Sensory
receptor. Okay, a receptor. And there's a whole bunch of different type of receptors. In fact, out in your skin, I mentioned four types of receptors. Give me one of them. Call it out. Merkel. Okay, Merkel's tactile disc. What does that one do? All right, you think Merkel? Tickle.
No.
Okay, they go together. So tickly touch. You got the tickly touch there. Give me another one. Pacinian court muscles. Pacinian, what does that one sense?
Pressure.
Pacinian pressure. Good. Which one senses pain, temperature, and crude touch?
Right.
The free nerve ending, like a little branch out there in your skin. The free nerve ending. And then there's one we forgot. Begins with an M. We didn't really forget it, but it just hasn't been mentioned yet. Meissner's. Meissner's support muscle. And what does that one do? Discriminative test. Now, I mean, I don't know how you're going to remember that. Meissner to me sounds like a smart person. I don't know why. I mean, I guess I have some ethnic discrimination things here, but Meissner sounds smart to me. Discriminative, smart, discriminative touch. Make up what you can that works, folks, I don't know. So you have those four in the skin and then two sensory receptors in the muscles. What are those? Something tendon. What's the first thing? Golgi tendon organ. It's the weirdest name of a receptor. Golgi tendon organ. That one makes sure you don't over contract the muscle. When the tension gets too great, that one causes the muscle to relax. Golgi tendon organ. What's the other one? Muscle spindle. That name sounds more appropriate. Well, I don't know. Spindle's kind of weird too. I guess I'm used to it. Muscle spindle. And that's the one that provokes a contraction when you have a quick stretch. So you hit them with the reflex hammer, put a quick stretch on the muscle, and it makes it contract. So those two receptors. Okay, so that's out on the tip of the dendrite. It picks up a stimulus. It sends, if we have enough stimulus to get to what number on the voltage scale? Negative 55. It will send the message inward. Where is the next place that that impulse goes, that action potential? Cell body. What's in the cell body? Nucleus, organelles, you can just kind of like stop there. Nucleus and organelles is good enough for me. All right, so the action potential went from dendrite to cell body. Now where's it going? Axon. In which direction will it travel on the axons? Yeah, I mean, we've just gone that way, so it makes sense that it continues to go away from the cell body. Okay, good. Now the axon has a lot going on it. First of all, the axon can branch as it goes down distally. What are the branches called? Not yet, not terminals. The branches, collaterals. So one axon can branch off into thousands of collaterals. It's amazing, the numbers are just mind-boggling. At the end of the collaterals, what is the swelling of the axon called? The axon terminal. And what's inside the axon terminal? Okay, synaptic vesicles, these little containers, a vesicle. And it holds the neurotransmitters, which are essential in taking that action potential and stimulating the next cell. Okay? What else is in that axon terminal? Mitochondria. The mitochondria supply the ATP, essential for allowing that synaptic vesicle to migrate to the edge of the cell membrane and then open up and release the neurotransmitter. Great. All right. But that's not all we need to say about the axon, because the axon typically has an insulation. But we don't call it insulation. What is it called?
Myelin.
And if we're out in the peripheral nervous system, what produces that myelin?
Schwann
cell. Produces by wrapping around. It wraps around the axon's membrane, which that cell membrane and axon is called a what? Axolema. Remember, lema is that sheath or that membrane term. Axolema. When the myelin wraps around the axolema, the outermost part of that Schwann cell is termed the neurolema. Okay, it's the cell membrane of the Schwann cell. And since it's all wrapped up, you're only seeing the very outermost part. That's your neurolema. But when it wraps around, it doesn't wrap around the entire axon like one big blanket around the axon. It just wraps around one spot. And then there's another Schwann cell that wraps around another spot. What are the gaps in between called?
Nodes
of Ranvier. Perfect. Okay, so now, looking at the synapse itself, that axon terminal, if we're just talking synapse lingo here, what are you going to call the axon terminal? Synapse lingo. Presynaptic terminal. All right, so we get to the very end. We got our neuron. I'm a neuron. Dendrite, cell body, axon. Axon terminal's at my fingertips. My fingers are the collaterals. So looking now just at the synapse, the axon terminals will connect, will junction, will synapse with the next cell. What's that next cell going to be?
Postsynaptic.
All right, that's your postsynaptic terminal. It can be a neuron, or it can be a muscle, or it could be a gland. If it's an axon synapsing onto a gland, what would you call that kind of synapse? No, it's not axo. Neuroglandular. All right, when it's going from nerve, axon, to either a muscle or cell, use the term neuroglandular or muscular. If it's an axon synapting onto a dendrite, axodendritic. Axon on the cell body? Axosomatic. Soma, cell body. Axo, what am I doing now? This is hard. Axoaxonic. Can't really get it on there. Okay, the axon going to an axon. All right, so we got our synapse. Axon terminal onto the next cell. Presynaptic terminal, postsynaptic terminal. What's the name of the space in between? Synaptic cleft. So now that neurotransmitter within the synaptic vesicle opens up and releases the neurotransmitter. We had an action potential come down, and in fact, when it came down, it's a myelinated axon. So what's the name of the conduction?
Saltatory.
If there was no myelin, it would come down. Continuous conduction. Remember those two terms? Saltatory is when it hops, node to node. Continuous is when it keeps going down. No myelin's there for it to allow it to do saltatory. So when it got down to the synapse, what sparked that synaptic vesicle to migrate and open up? ATP was needed from the mitochondria, but what ion came in to the... Oh, good. Calcium. Calcium. So we got down there, calcium, because of that action potential that came down, calcium comes into the presynaptic terminal, synaptic vesicle migrates, open up, neurotransmitter goes through the synaptic cleft, and then the next cell, the postsynaptic terminal, has receptor sites, it picks up that neurotransmitter, and if there's enough of a stimulus, enough neurotransmitter coming not just from that neuron, but from all the other neurons going on to that cell to get the voltage up to what?
Negative
55. What did it start at?
Negative
70. To get up to negative 55, that next cell will depolarize. If it's a muscle, it will contract. If it's a neuron, the active potential will be passed on. All right. Good, good, good. Okay, then. Going back to all that action potential depolarization stuff, when the receptor on the dendrite is stimulated, or when the postsynaptic terminal gets neurotransmitter coming to it and is stimulated, what ion will start to come into either that neuron or that postsynaptic terminal? Sodium. And how do you abbreviate sodium, or how? What's the symbol? Capital N, small a, and is it positive or negative?
Positive.
Okay, so we have a positive sodium ion coming in through that cell membrane. It's semipermeable, which means it can come in, but only at certain times. What does it actually go through, that phospholipid part of the cell, or through proteins?
Proteins.
Embedded in that cell membrane are proteins that are specific for their ion. So the specific proteins for sodium allow that sodium in, and sodium keeps coming in according to how strong the stimulus is. You told me already the voltage is at negative 70 for that cell at rest. So now that sodium's coming in, it's making the inside of the cell more positive or more negative?
Positive.
More positive. So from negative 70, it's going up. If it gets to negative 60, what happens?
Nothing.
If it gets to negative 55, what happens? Those proteins that were allowing sodium to come in now provide great access to the sodium. So it's a change in the rate of sodium coming in. It floods on in there. And then the inside of the cell becomes what? Even more positive. How positive does it get? You sure? You're right. Positive 30. That's the number I gave you. So go with my number. Gets all the way up to positive 30. Now, going back to negative 55, when those proteins opened up and allowed sodium to rush in, there's two terms that we use now. We say the cell is depolarizing, and in the case of a neuron, even the muscle too, that now there will be a blank going down the cell. Action potential. So depolarization, action potential, they're all kicked off by that negative 55 voltage. And what do you call the negative 55 voltage? The threshold stimulus. Great. So if we don't get up the threshold stimulus, then the pump will work and get that sodium out of there, but there won't be a depolarization. There won't be an action potential. Cell just goes back to rest. All right. So we did get it, though. We got all the way up to positive 30. What makes it go back to rest?
Repolarization,
the events of repolarization, and it's the positive 30 that actually kicks off repolarization. The cell can only get so positive until that charge starts the cell to repolarize. So two things happen to repolarize the cell. Give me the one about sodium. All right, so all those protein channels that were allowing sodium to flood in, now close their doors. No more sodium coming in. Okay? If that happens, then you can't have any more positive charge coming in. But the inside of the cell is still positive 30. So something else has to happen to get it to repolarize. What's the second thing that happens? All right. The potassium channels open up and allow potassium to go which way?
Out.
And what force causes that? Is it active transport kicking out? No, it's diffusion. The potassium diffuses out. And what's the symbol for potassium?
K
positive. Good. K positive, so potassium diffuses out, taking with it its positive charge. So the inside of the cell becomes less positive, goes down to what? Yeah. Negative 70, yes, but then it goes a little further, and I'm giving you the number negative 90. Different books give you different numbers. Gets down to negative 90. Is all well now? Can we go back to rest?
No,
because? Okay, sodium and potassium are in the wrong spot. So the charge is right. It's a little negative, but it's right. It's in the right zone. But the sodium and the potassium are on the wrong side of the cell. Okay, you ever get stuck in the wrong neighborhood? What else? All right, the active transport pump is going to get it out. It's going to recreate the balance of ions. And what is needed to do an active transport? ATP. We use a lot of ATP to do that when we're at rest and when we're exercising too, but definitely always working. Okay, good. Now, going back to my axon, it's myelinated. We got saltatory conduction because it's myelinated. It's hopping. If I wanted to speed this up, if I were the creator and I wanted to make this axon faster, would I just give it more stimulus?
No.
Stimulus has no effect on speed, none whatsoever. What are the three things that affect speed of an axon?
Size.
But what kind of size? Length? Diameter. Diameter. Okay, that's one. What's another one?
Myelin.
If it's got myelin, it's faster. And the third one? Yeah, increase the heat. Increase the heat. If you decrease it, it slows down. Good. Okay. Fast versus slow. I think we got all that. See how smart? I mean, I hope you guys realize how much you've learned. Because most people are actually responding. There's always one of you sitting in there that's going, I have no clue. But I'm not seeing that. No one's eyes look like they're doing that. All right, so we got the basic neuron physiology and anatomy down. That's your building block, your functional and structural unit of the nervous system. So let's build some things. First, let's build a brain. It's amazing to me that neurons build the structure of a brain. It's amazing to me how they function and what they can do. What you need to do, which will amaze me as well, as learn all these functions and which structure does them. Let me find what I wanted to say here. Yeah, I didn't tell you this. Brain in an average adult weighs just 3 pounds. That's all. You saw how small they were when I brought up those, and those are a little bit smaller because of the preservation, but 3 pounds, that's it. 100 billion neurons. A lot of neurons at birth. And you know what? It just goes downhill from there. Okay? You have as many neurons as you're going to have at birth. All you can do from there is kill them off. You cannot make more neurons. They do not divide. You know that mitosis where cells divide and create new cells? Neurons do not do that. So what you got at birth is it. You smoke the stuff, you kill them. You drink the stuff, you kill them. You age, you kill them. And then this is my other like amazing fact that I didn't tell you before. Each neuron, this is an important one. This is going to blow you away. Each neuron makes anywhere from 1,000 to 10,000 synapses with other neurons. One neuron. 1,000 to 10,000 synapses from one neuron. So what does that mean about the collaterals? And there's a lot of collaterals. There's at least 1,000 collaterals. Maybe up to 10,000 from one neuron. Is it any wonder why we can't make brains from computers? It's just really intense. Okay, so now back to your worksheet here. Got my little stats out. All the functions of this brain, like I say, you need to know. So let's just work. We're going to go backwards. We're going to go lobes and then go down to the brainstem. Frontal lobe. Give me a function. There's two.
Personality.
And what's the other? Motor. All right, so personality and motor are the two general functions of the frontal lobe. Name of the strip? I'm in the frontal. Precentral gyrus. It's right anterior to the central gyrus. That's your primary motor strip, right? You should be able to find it on your diagram, and that's the function of it. The rest of the frontal lobe that does motor helps organize, plan, get those motors down so they're smooth. Okay, moving more posteriorly, what lobe am I on here? Well, I'm on the lobe of the parietal, and the specific lobe that is procentral gyrus. That's the only gyrus we named the parietal lobe. The whole lobe functions in what?
Sensory.
Very generally, we're talking sensory here. That one gyrus is your primary strip. So along that, the whole body's organized. All the sensations that come out from your body parts go here first, and then they go to the rest of the parietal lobe to be processed. All right, down behind your ear, what's the name of the lobe?
Temporal
lobe. What is the primary function?
Auditory.
Memory's also a function, but auditory is the one on your handout. Posteriorly, what's the lobes? Occipital lobes. And what's their primary from? Vision and reflexes associated with vision. Good. Now there's more to what you're looking at here on the lobes, because there were three different language centers that we talked about. Okay, where's Broca's area? Frontal lobe. And what is Broca's area? What part of language is it responsible for? Okay, think motor. Motor is putting out. You put out your motor, right? So, thoughts into words. See, you're having trouble doing that. He had the thought, he couldn't get it out. And we're not talking about moving lips and tongues here. We're talking about creating the language to express the thoughts. So I always think frontal lobe, you know, you're putting out the motor. With the Broca's area being in the frontal lobe, it's the putting out of the language. You have the thoughts, can you put it into language? Alrighty, what's another language center? Wernicke's. We got Broca's and Wernicke's, two funny names. Wernicke's area is pretty much the opposite of Broca's. So how would you describe Wernicke's?
Understanding
language? Yeah, it's the understanding, the comprehension of language. Ears are working, you can hear it, but you really can't make sense of it. Wernicke's area allows you to make sense of it. And since we're talking kind of like ears, what lobe of the brain do you think this is in?
Temporal.
Okay, it's kind of temporal parietal. It's right there on the border, but it's in the temporal. So it kind of goes with the ear. And then the last one. This is the one that doesn't have a funny name. It's just the gyrus. The angular gyrus. Okay? This one is specific language looking at recognition of written words. So you would think recognition, visual, but don't. Okay, it's not in the occipital lobe, it's in the parietal. Yeah, dyslexia is a problem of the angular gyrus. Does anyone here have familiarity with dyslexia to understand that? It's, you know, you see it, but it gets confused somewhere from eyes to brain, so it doesn't get processed the right way. So yes, good point. Okay, so those were the three language areas, and so far I've really only talked about one motor area of the brain. What was that? What lobe? Frontal. Did I hear parietal come up from over here? Okay, good. I'm hearing things. Okay, frontal lobes, motor. What are the other two structures of the brain that have a heavy motor component? Got to go deep now.
Hypothalamus.
Nope, not the hypothalamus. I'm not going to take that one. Cerebellum. Cerebellum has a heavy motor component. That one, it's not part of the cerebrum. So I'm going to one of the other four principal parts, the cerebellum. The cerebellum is responsible for coordination, postural motion, and tone, and equilibrium. Posture, tone go together, equilibrium. So when you think cerebellum, think coordination, equilibrium, and posture. It's what keeps you balanced. It's what keeps your muscles moving smooth. The frontal lobe moves all those muscles. It actually says, you, muscle, move. You move first, you move second. This is how we're doing it. It plans out the whole thing. But it's the cerebellum that's kind of like the sergeant, or the NCO, that kind of makes it happen. Puts it all together nice and smooth. Gets the coordination, gets the posture and the equilibrium. That's kind of how I think about it. Right? Might work for you. Then there's one more section of the brain that has a heavy motor component, and this is back in the cerebrum, but not on the cerebral cortex, not in the lobes we named, it's deep. That's the deep structure. Nope, I'm staying in the cerebrum. You're going down to brainstem with midbrain, and I know why you're going there. That's no, corpus callosum is just a bunch of axons going from one hemisphere to the other. It could be motor and sensory. Basal ganglia, that deep structure. I can't even show you it on here. All right? And I actually don't have any good pictures in your handout of it. You could do it if you cut the brain this way, down the frontal plane. You could see the basal ganglia. It sits on the other side of the thalamus. All right? It's in that region. That part of the motor is the initiation, kind of controls it. Think of the Parkinson's patient that's frozen. Okay? It initiates the motion. So the three motor components, basal ganglia, initiation and control. Cerebellum, coordination, equilibrium, posture. Frontal lobe, somatic muscle movement. It tells the muscles to move. All right, now somebody, when I was saying all that, said hypothalamus. Not exactly a wrong answer, but just not what I'm looking for. Hypothalamus does the autonomic nervous system, so it's going to help with motor activities for all the guts. Okay, so let's go to the hypothalamus next. The hypothalamus and the thalamus lie within the head and the beak region of the hummingbird. Their functions are totally different, but together they're called the diencephalon, one of the four principal parts, the diencephalon. The function of the hypothalamus is threefold. Autonomic nervous system is one. What's the other system that it controls? Endocrine, hormones. So we got autonomic, endocrine, and then the last function is really a package of functions. Give me a couple examples of them. Sleep cycles, temperature, hunger,
blood pressure.
Thank you. Sexual rhythm, somebody who says it. Okay, some not so much basic survival skills, but higher survival skills. Things you need. That's your hypothalamus. The thalamus, on the other hand, what is the thalamus all about?
Sensory.
Thank you. Sensory. All sensory entering the cerebrum. You know, that's made it through the brainstem, came up the spinal cord, made it through the brainstem, all of it makes it through the brainstem. All of it goes to the thalamus. Some of it gets processed there, your more basic sensory like pain, temperature. The rest of it goes up to which lobe of the brain?
Parietal
lobe. All right? All of it, though, goes to the thalamus. So after it leaves the thalamus, if it's going up to the parietal lobe, it's going to go into some white matter, the internal capsule. Remember that name? All things entering the cerebrum go through the internal capsule. All things exiting go through the internal capsule. It's just a highway. And since it's all axons, what color is it?
White.
It's white matter. The other highway within the brain you can see here. Corpus callosum, made up of commensural neurons. Okay, and that's all the axons going from one hemisphere to the other, right? Okay. All right, so we got the diencephalon talked about, the cerebrum, the cerebellum. What did we not say? What principal part? Brainstem, made up of three things, medulla oblongata, pons, and the midbrain. Starting with the midbrain, we're going to work our way down. The midbrain, someone mentioned this one when we were talking about the motor things. So on your little worksheet there, it says three principal parts and one relayer. The midbrain is your relayer. This is the one that helps all those three principal parts to communicate. There's a lot going on in the midbrain with sending axons here and there to get to the cerebellum, basal ganglia, and the frontal lobe of the cerebrum. Midbrain. It also is involved in visual reflexes as well. Pons. Pons is also a big relayer. What is it relaying for?
Cerebellum.
All right, so just the cerebellum, that's the big relayer for that. There's things going past it, up and down the brainstem, but major function of the pons is to get all the cerebellar material or knowledge where it needs to go, to include from the right side of the cerebellum, the right hemisphere, to the left hemisphere. The corpus callosum, per se, for the cerebellum is the pons, but we don't call it that, all right? All right, medulla. Medulla oblongata has a lot of functions. All your basic life support. So we're talking about heart, breathing rate, laughing, vomiting, sneezing. All these really important things. Swallowing. Which one of all those that we mentioned does the pons help out with?
Respiration.
Good. That's all I'm going to say on the brain, okay? So... It's always a struggle to get all this done in time. Spinal cord. I don't know why you guys don't like the spinal cord. Jeepers. All right, the spinal cord. You got gray and white matter in the spinal cord. The gray matter makes up what kind of animal? The horny butterfly. All right, so you got a horny butterfly. It's gray matter, so it's cell bodies. Ready? The white matter around it, we don't call it a horny butterfly. What do you call it?
Columns.
You got three of them. We'll use the dorsal and the ventral term. So you got the dorsal column, the lateral column, and the ventral column. Within the horns, you have three of them. The dorsal horn, the ventral horn, and the lateral horn. So starting with horns, which one functions in sensory?
Dorsal
horn. Which one's motor? And?
Lateral.
So what's the difference between the ventral and lateral horn? Okay. One's, you only see in thoracic, but for a reason. One is autonomic or involuntary motor. That's your lateral horn. Your ventral horn is your somatic motor. So you only see the lateral horn where you have sympathetic input. Okay. Well, and parasympathetic. So where you have autonomic, which is just in certain portion of the spinal cord. That's not, the portions aren't important, it's the horns. What's their function? So that's the function of the horns. For the white matter, the columns, what's the function of the dorsal column? It's sensory, but let's get specific here. We can, so why not?
Vibration.
Proprioception and discriminative touch. If you know the function of the dorsal column, white matter, you also know the column of the function of the dorsal column tract, which is one of the three tracts you need to know the function of. It's the sensory one we're not mapping out, but you need to know the function. So same function, it shouldn't be any extra memory, okay? You're not going to use up more synapses there. Same function. Going lateral and ventral, with the columns, you have almost identical functions. So what are the functions for those two columns? All right, so we got a sensory function. The sensory function for both of them consists of pain, but what else? Okay, pain, temperature, and crude touch. Again, I don't think you have crude touch in your handout, just pain and temperature for both the lateral column and the anterior column. What else do both these columns have? Motor. But just like the horns, the motor's different for the two of them. All right, so which one, lateral or anterior, or sorry, ventral, has the somatic, the voluntary motor?
Lateral,
it's opposite. Okay, the gray matter, the lateral horn, is your autonomic. In the white matter, it's your ventral column. I didn't create it, don't get mad at me, it's just the way we're built. All righty? Okay. The lateral and the ventral column both have motor, but the lateral column has your voluntary, your somatic motor. The ventral column has your autonomic motor. But when you look at the gray matter, the horns, it's opposite. The lateral horn is your autonomic, and your ventral horn is somatic. So it's just flip-flopped, okay? And again, just got to memorize it. Okay, so that's naming the structures within the spinal cord itself, but we also need to name what comes off the spinal cord that creates the spinal nerve. So coming off, let's put this thing upside down. Coming off dorsally, what's this called?
Dorsal
root. What's the swelling called? And why is it swelling? Cell bodies are in there. What kind of neuron? E or afferent?
Afferent
neuron. Going on the ventral side, this is the ventral root. What kind of neurons run through it?
Efferent
neurons. Where they have united, what do you call that?
Spinal
nerve. If this continued out, we would see it splitting, with part of the splitting going dorsally and part of it, most of it, going ventrally. What would the dorsal part be called? The dorsal primary ramus. And then the ventral primary ramus. Which of the two goes into a plexus? The ventral, because the dorsal fin, dorsal goes to the back. It's like a strip of the skunk. All righty? Good. So when they split into the dorsal primary ramus and the ventral primary ramus, do they have separate functions? Is one sensory, one motor?
No.
They're mixed. Once they get to the spinal nerve, they're mixed. They continue to be mixed from their peripheral. Okay, for the most part. Alrighty? Okay, what did I miss here? Let me look here. Hang on. Okay, we get to that spinal nerve. And the spinal nerve has connective tissue coverings. Three of them. What's the outermost covering? Epi what? Epinorium. Then you have the innermost covering, which covers just one neuron. What's that called?
Endonorium.
The endonorium covers one neuron. You take a bunch of neurons, or nerve fibers, another way you could say it. I think that's how it is in your actual notes, nerve fiber. You take one nerve fiber, one nerve cell, one neuron, covered with this endonorium, and you group it together in a bundle. What's the name of the bundle?
Fascicle.
Fascicle, fascicle, fascicle. So you have these fascicles. The fascicles are surrounded by a connective tissue covering too. What's that called?
Perinorium.
You got perinorium around a fascicle. The fascicles are put together into a spinal nerve or a peripheral nerve. And what's the outermost covering?
Epinorium.
Good. Three connective tissue coverings around your peripheral and your spinal nerves. And they continue through the plexus too, okay? How about your brain and spinal cord? Do they have any connective tissue coverings?
Yes.
Hey, of course they do. The meninges. What's the innermost one? Pia matter. What's the outermost one? And the middle? Arachnoid. Where does the cerebral spinal fluid lie? I think I heard it right. Between the arachnoid and the pia matter. Where is the cerebral spinal fluid formed?
Corpus callosum.
No, the choroid plexus. We got another plexus. We have this plexus, and we have the choroid plexus. The choroid plexus produces cerebral spinal fluid. Where do you find choroid plexus disease? All right, in your ventricles. You don't have to be as specific as the doctor over there. In the ventricles. They secrete the cerebral spinal fluid. Does it stay stagnant or does it flow?
Flow.
Flow, good, okay. Plexuses, we just went through them with the homework. Cervical, brachial, lumbar, sacral, know the spinal nerve levels. Alrighty, if, let me pull this back again. If, here at C5, I have a nerve injury, what kind of sensory loss will I have? A nerve field sensory loss or a dermatone sensory loss? I have C5 injured. It's a spinal nerve. Dermatone. If it's a peripheral nerve that has sensory loss, the sensory loss is considered a nerve field. Okay, that's how it's on the body. Great. So which one of the two resembles stripes, the dermatone or the nerve field? You guys got that down, dermatone, stripes. So what would you say a nerve field resembles? Patches. All righty. Okay. Oh, I skipped something. Going back up to where I said spinal cord. The spinal cord does not lie in the entire vertebral canal, meaning that hole in the vertebral bones. Where does it stop? At what level does it stop? Around L2. Okay, good. So the spinal cord itself goes down to L2. What is it called, all those peripheral nerves that continue to descend through the vertebral canal? The caudaequina. Important to know because later we're going to learn caudaequina syndrome. You should know what the caudaequina is first. Too much mumble mumble. I'm not going to go through all the cranial nerves. I have it down here to remind you that you need to go through all the cranial nerves. All right? The ones that confuse me. Let's go through those couple. Facial nerve and trigeminal. Which one is the muscles of the face? The facial nerve or the trigeminal? Facial nerve. Muscles of the face. The trigeminal is sensory of the face. And muscles of mastication or chewing. All right, that one gets me confused sometimes. Which one is equilibrium? Vestibular ocular, because equilibrium comes from the ear. Vestibular ocular, okay, good. Okay, I'm not going to waste any more time on this. You just got to memorize them. The next thing I want to talk about, though, and the last kind of topic is your peripheral nerve injuries. Traumatic-wise, they go from being least severe to most severe. We just talked about this in your homework. Norpraxia was your least severe. Most severe is the neurotenesis. In the middle is the axotenesis. What separates one from the other? What is damaged? What is damaged? So with your most mild case, your norpraxia, is there any structure damaged?
No.
No. Okay. Everything's intact. We just have a temporary disruption of it. And why is there a temporary disruption? Swelling pressure. And what's the actual cell that gets messed up? The Schwann cell. So your myelin. We have a little myelin problem. All right. But it can take care of itself. Myelin can repair itself. All will be better in a course of minutes to months. All right? So nothing is actually disruptive as far as the neuron is concerned in a neuropraxia. Moving down to the moderately severe one, the axotomesis. What is disruptive?
The axon.
The axon. That's why it's called axotomesis. Okay? Axon is in the word there, in the name. Axotomesis is disruptive. So are you going to have conduction past the injury site?
No.
At this point, you won't. Maybe you will for like an hour or two, but then it's going to stop. All right? Then conduction will be bad. Then your most severe one. You have, obviously, the axon disrupted, but what else? Endonorium. Okay, we go back to the coverings. The endonorium is now disrupted in the neurokinesis. That's the big structural difference between the two. So do you have conduction past the injury site?
No,
you didn't in the moderate one, so you're not going to in the severe one. What is the conduction like in the mild one, the neuropraxia?
Dysfunctional.
So your numbness, your tingling, the weird sensations. Great. Okay. So let's say we have not a neuropraxia, but we have an axotomesis. Axon is disrupted. What is the first response of the cell, the neuron? Try to say it. I want to hear you. You laughed at me. Not bad. Okay, the one that begins to see, the chromatolysis. Why can't I say that word? Anyway, that's what happens first. That's the swelling of the cell body. Organelles preparing to rebuild. Mesial bodies is the organelle, repairs. Second thing that happens. Valerian degeneration. Okay, this from injury site distal, that axon degenerates. The Schwann cells prepare for the attack. Okay, they prepare for the rebuilding. What they do is they multiply and they line something. What do they line? The endonorium. All right. If it's a severe axotomesis, you'll have retrograde degeneration, meaning from the area of injury, there might be some axon degeneration going proximally. It might go all the way back to the cell body if things are really bad. Okay? That's retrograde degeneration. Then we have sequential recovery, which means out of that axon, whatever stub is left, you're going to have buds, and they're going to grow from that proximal point distally. Through what? The endonorium tube, that's all lined with Schwann cells, ready for it to grow back. Great. So, that's all happy and wonderful. What if it's a neurokinesis?
There's
no tube. No tube. So what do you need to have happen to kind of make a tube there? Surgery. Got to pull the two severed ends of the nerve together to get the tubes lined up as best as possible. You don't want to do any torsion, right, if you're a surgeon. You got to pick your surgeons well. Of course, you know, it's an emergency. You don't have much choice. But anyway, what kind of things will affect prognosis?
The distance.
Distance. So the longer it has to grow, it's going to take time. Over time, you can get scar tissue block in the way. The muscles it's growing to can get fibrotic because they're not being used, so they start to become bad. What were you going to say? Okay, if it can't find a tube, it's going to just ball upon itself, and it's not going to go anywhere. So you have lots of problems. What if it finds the wrong tube? Yeah, you may, if it's the same functional tube, like a motor or a sensory, depending on the nerve, then you may have function, but you may not. Okay, not bad. Guys, if you're hanging with me, you're doing good. The only other thing I want to talk about, and I'm sure we're beyond our hour now, 2 minutes beyond, is this. Tracks. Save the best for last. What we're going to do is talk about the two tracks you need to know in terms of where's the cell body located, where's the synapse, where's this, where's that. Meanwhile, while I'm talking, you map. Okay? So pick a color. It's going to be your color for, we're going to do the motor track first. Pick a color for your motor track. What are you going to call this track? Okay, that's the one. It's the corticospinal tract, but what column does it run down? Lateral column. So it's the lateral cortical spinal tract. I know we're talking motor because we're going cortical, cerebral cortex, to the spine. It's all in the name. Lateral cortical spinal tract. How many neurons does it take to go from cortex to muscle? Two. Upper motor neuron and a lower motor neuron. Where's the synapse going to be between the two neurons? Not in the medulla oblongata. In the spinal cord, specifically what horn? Ventral horn, your motor horn. And this is a somatic motor tract, so it's going to be in your ventral horn. So right now, on your sheet, you can draw a cell body in the ventral horn because you know that's where one of the synapses will be, that's where one of the cell bodies is. We're not worried about dendrites. They're short little fellows. We don't really talk about them. All right, so you should have one cell body and a ventral horn. Make sure you're in the ventral horn. You know you're in the ventral horn because the root coming off near it does not have a swelling. All right? Okay, so that's one cell body, but we got two neurons. Where's the other cell body for the upper motor neuron?
The precentral.
Precentral gyrus of the blank lobe.
Frontal lobe.
Frontal lobe. Precentral gyrus, remember my little thing there? If it has an S in it and it's post then it's sensory. So you're in the precentral gyrus of the frontal lobe. So you should draw a cell body up there in the cerebral cortex and label it precentral gyrus. I'm sure you don't need to write down frontal lobe because you know that. You know. All right? So we got two cell bodies on the sheet now. One in the precentral gyrus of the cerebrum, the cerebral cortex. One down in the ventral horn. I didn't say this, but I'm hoping that you made them contralateral. Not on the same side. If not, put another cell body contralateral to where you have your cell body in the ventral horn, because at some point it's going to cross. Which neuron crosses? The upper motor neuron or the lower motor neuron? It's the upper. That's why those two have to be contralateral from each other. Okay, so axon of your upper motor neuron. It's exiting the cerebrum, so it's going to go through your internal capsule. I made you a nice little pathway for internal capsule there. Have it go through there. Have it go down to the medulla, staying on the same side, because we haven't crossed yet. It's in the medulla oblongata that it crosses. So I labeled this as your medulla here. Have it cross to the contralateral side. Continue that axon down so it synapses, so that it's in the lateral column of the spinal cord, because it's the lateral cortical spinal tract. And then have the axon terminal, the Y, come into the gray matter. Axons are allowed in. And synapse onto the cell body in the ventral horn. That's your upper motor neuron. It went from cerebral cortex, precentral gyrus, internal capsule, medulla, got to medulla, crossed over, continued descending down on the spinal cord in the lateral column. Then it went to the gray matter, ventral horn, synapse onto the lower motor neuron cell body, dendrites. All right, so now let's do the lower motor neuron. Cell body's there in the ventral horn. It's going to exit the spinal cord. Which root is it going to take, the dorsal or the ventral? Ventral root. So make an axon going from the cell body, going out the ventral root, going to the spinal cord, and now you got to think. You get to decide. Is that muscle going to the back, or is it going to an extremity or the tummy? If it's going to an extremity, we'll say it's, you know, I said you can decide now. I'm telling you what to do. Let's say it goes to the finger. Then which primary ramus will it do? What's that? The dorsal primary ramus or the ventral primary ramus?
The ventral,
because the dorsal just goes to the back like a skunk. Ventral primary ramus. So on your picture there, it actually splits. We have a Y-ing. Pick the one that goes ventrally. You'll know it's ventral because you just had a ventral root on the same side. So in other words, it's going down. And out you go. All right, easy, easy as pie. Pie's really difficult, though, if you ever try to make it. It's easy to eat, hard to make. Okay, any questions on that track?
I have a question.
Yes?
The line coming down the where it splits in the medulla oblongata.
It doesn't split. Oh, you're looking at your picture. The reason that one has two neurons is because there are some neurons that do not cross. We're not learning that part of the track. So in your handout, you have a diagram that shows some neurons that do not cross in the medulla. Disregard that. We're not going to learn everything. We're just learning the majority of the fibers, the neurons, which do cross. All right? Does that help? Okay. This is one of the things we can go over more after we're done. You know, when it's free time. So now let me go to the other track. This one is called your anterior lateral spinal thalamic track. So we're going from the spine to the thalamus. So what's the function? General function?
Sensory.
Sensory. What is the specific sensory function? Pain, temperature, crude touch. All right, those three go together. Pain, temperature, crude touch. All righty, how many neurons?
Three
order neurons. First, second, third. Remember on your homework, a lot of you like started at the top and went down. Let's get this right. First order neuron is the first one to pick up the stimulus. So it's the one with the receptors. Second order neuron is your spinal cord neuron. The third order neuron is your brain one. So we're going to start the same way we did with the last thing, talking about cell bodies and synapses. If we can get the cell bodies in the right spot, we can certainly connect the axons. So cell bodies. Where is the cell body for the first order neuron, the afferent peripheral neuron? Dorsal root ganglion. This is one of those weird neurons. It's not a multipolar structured neuron like the other one we just diagrammed. This one is unipolar. So the cell body is in the dorsal root ganglion. It has a stalk, and from the stalk comes the two processes, the one that's axon-like and the one that's dendrite-like. The dendrite-like one is the one that goes to the periphery, has the receptors on the end of it. We're not going to draw that yet. We just got cell body now. Where is the cell body for the second order neuron? Dorsal horn. Dorsal horn is sensory and function. Second order neuron is a spinal cord neuron. So it lies in the spinal cord. The most obvious, the right place is that dorsal horn. You wouldn't put it in the column. It's in the horn. So give yourself a cell body on the dorsal horn. Are we going to be on the same side as the first order neuron cell body? Have we crossed yet?
No.
No. So same side. Unilateral. We got three neurons, so we need one more location of a cell body. Where's the third order neuron cell body going to be located?
Thalamus,
which is the other really right answer, because everything's got to go to the thalamus. Okay, the sensory, every sensory thing goes to the thalamus. So put a cell body in the thalamus, but which one? Unilateral or contralateral?
Contralateral,
because by the time we get to the third order neuron, the cross has occurred. So the first two cell bodies, first order neuron, second order neuron, on the same side. Third order neurons in the thalamus on the contralateral side. All right, if you got the cell bodies down, how many synapses in this track?
Two.
Two, because we don't count anything at the end there, right? Two synapses between the three neurons. First order neuron, draw the dendrite-like process. It has a receptor in the periphery. It's going to come in via either the ventral primary ramus or the dorsal primary ramus, depending on where it's coming from. If it's coming from the back, it will be dorsal primary ramus. So you bring it in whichever primary ramus you want to, but when you get to the root, it can only be in one root that it comes into the spinal cord. Which root?
Dorsal.
You know, the cell body's waiting for it in there. So it's got to come in the dorsal root. Dorsal root root. The cell body's in the dorsal root ganglion, so have the stalk connect to it. And now let's continue the axon part of this process. Where's the axon going to go to? Dorsal horn, to the second order neuron sitting there. The cell body's there waiting for it. So make that axon extend out, synapse onto the second order neuron in the dorsal horn. We got one order neuron down, two to go. Second order neuron, the cell body starts in that dorsal horn. You already got it there. It's going to cross immediately. So cross that bugger over. Now you can make a choice. You can either have it go to the anterior column or the lateral, because this track has both. It travels through both of those columns. So pick a column, have it go to it, and then head up to the medulla, staying on that side. You've already crossed, and now you're on the contralateral side from where you began. Go up to the medulla. Do you do anything in the medulla?
No.
Continue on to the thalamus and synapse onto the third order neuron. So all the second order neuron does is cross and ascend. Cross in the spinal cord and ascend to the thalamus. Synapses onto the third order neuron in the thalamus. From there, the axon of that neuron goes through the internal capsule and up into the cerebral cortex. Which lobe? It's sensory. Postcentral gyrus of the parietal lobe. All right. Those of you that got it, I can tell you got it. Those of you that don't, I can tell you need to stick around.